Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Nancy West. Nancy is a marketing and outreach specialist for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Nancy has worked in the mortgage industry since 1977, holding various positions, including being an underwriter. Nancy joined HUD in 2004, and in 2006, she accepted one of four nationwide marketing and outreach specialist positions. Nancy, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Bruce, and thanks for having us back.
That's right. It's been a couple of years.
Yes, it has been. There's a lot that has happened since then.
I suspect that is true. It might be helpful to give us an idea of what some of the jobs are that you do as an outreach specialist.
Primarily, I work with our industry partners, educating on FHA programs and how to utilize those programs for borrowers looking to purchase or refinance their homes. I also deal with congressional leaders explaining the finer details on FHA and FHA programs, and I participate in all types of industry conventions, and we also do outreach to consumers on foreclosure and loss mitigation workshops.
And I would think that you could have been in the mortgage industry from 2002 to 2007 and never even done an FHA loan.
Exactly. And part of that was due to the loan limits at the time. FHA loan limits in California was 362,790. When you had an average sale price of $500,000, consumers didn't want to come in with almost $200,000 to get an FHA insured mortgage.
Especially since they didn't have to qualify for the other ones.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
that's just a minor component.
Now, you have a background as an underwriter.
That's correct. I spent a good portion of my career underwriting all types of loans, Fannie, Freddie, FHA, VA, and yes, even those stated income option arms.
Did it kind of surprise you where the industry was going?
Yes, it did. And I saw it, as an underwriter in the private sector. Some of the loans that would come across my desk, stated income option arm. I had, as an underwriter for the bank that I worked for, I had a due diligence to that bank to make the decision based on whether it made sense that borrower earned what they stated that they earned.
I see.
So I turned down a lot of loans, I can tell you that. But
not everybody should have been able to make 10 grand a month in that job description, huh?
Exactly. And there are a lot of tools out there that you can utilize as an underwriter, as a lender, to determine whether those types of things make sense. There's a lot of information that you have available to make those decisions, and some lenders obviously were not necessarily concerned with the quality control.
Well, I would imagine the sophistication has grown on the other side of the fence. In other words, somebody can make something look pretty real with the invention of scanners, et cetera.
Well, that's with the documentation itself. But when we were talking about the stated income, for an example, if you have a person that's a court reporter, let's say at the county court in Orange County, you could actually search incomes for that type of position in certain areas to come back and give you a range.
Mm-hmm.
So was it reasonable this person was making $4,500 a month, 6 years on the job, when the range went from, let's say, $4,000 to $5,500.
Right.
So sure, it made sense. So, you had to use your judgment, the tools you did have available, to make those kinds of decisions. But I can tell you, there were lenders out there that didn't have necessarily the same regard.
Sure. It looked like the game changed from being responsible, thinking you might actually have it as a portfolio loan, to knowing you could get rid of it and not caring who got it. So
I guess.
Yeah, that was a bad turn of events that we're paying for and will for quite a while.
Sure.
Nancy, you're not just connected to California. You have how many states do you...
Out of the Santa Ana Homeownership Center, we have the eight western United States: California, Arizona, Nevada, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, Hawaii, and who am I missing? Oh, Idaho, sorry. Can't forget Idaho.
Just in mentioning the ones you've mentioned, you've got at least three of the epicenters of problems: Arizona, Nevada, and California.
Absolutely. Three of the hardest hit states in the country are within our jurisdiction. And I spent some time over in Nevada, in Las Vegas, primarily earlier in the year. Our secretary had ordered a detail, a foreclosure task force detail, to be staffed by HUD and FHA staff. So I went over there. I was over there for about 5 weeks.
Well, you know, I was thinking in the years that were really subprime dominated, FHA didn't. They really weren't a big participant in making loans, and in a way that's been a blessing because you couldn't possibly have the same losses as the subprime world just because you weren't participating in a lot of those states, like you say, California. But now that, you know, now that we're in 2010, I would imagine the HUD has definitely had some delinquencies coming out of the 08 and 09 loan pack. So is that increasing?
Actually, it's not. Out of, for example, California specifically, our delinquency rate for our book of business for 2008 and 2009 is only at 2.7%.
Wow, that's very healthy.
Yes, exactly. But FHA never did. We don't have a stated income program. We never have. It's a fully documented, full qualifying mortgage. And so our delinquency, even though our numbers have gone up dramatically in California, in our homeownership center, for example, over the last 2 years, we've done over a half a million loans. We've insured over a half a million loans. So to have only a delinquency rate of 2.79 for California is pretty good.
It absolutely is. Now, that kind of brings up another question. Would you say that the qualifying process is more important than the size of the down payment?
It's regardless of the amount someone is putting down, you still have to qualify for the mortgage.
Okay. And I know there was some efforts to raise the FHA down payment from where it is to something like 5%. Is that, I know that didn't pass. Is that something that probably wouldn't have had a major impact on the quality of the loan? I know the thinking was it probably would, but it doesn't look like it would have.
Well, under the new bill that was passed by the House last week, H.R. 5072, there is regulation in there. It was passed by the House and has moved over to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
It contained in that bill is the potential for an increased down payment, perhaps with tied to FICO scores. Right now, we have the ability, the department, the commissioner, and the secretary have the ability to increase the down payment. But, you know, right now, FHA, as part of the government, we've got to look to help stabilize the market. Would increasing down payment requirements today help to do that? We're not sure. We have to weigh the risks to what will happen broad scale, not just to FHA. We're trying, you know, our mission is to help stabilize the marketplace, which is why we came into existence in 1934, was to help stabilize the market then, and we're here to stabilize it today. And that's why, as of today, you've seen no movement on increased down payment.
I think what you're saying is one of the bigger problems might be make it too tough to get in, that the percentage of home ownership would decline rather dangerously.
I don't know. I can't answer that question. Since we haven't done it, and we wouldn't know, that would be projecting out, and I don't think we could do that at this point.
Okay.
You know, our share of business has gone up dramatically, but there's a lot of that. That's due to a variety of reasons. I'm not so sure it's just the down payment.
What is the loan balance now in California?
729,760.
And that's good until that's, when?
Well, that's good right now through December 31st of this year. But that's not to say that that will not be extended. We don't know what the government will do at that point, whether the president will issue an extension on those loan limits. Again, contained under H.R. 5072, there is some legislation in there that's trying to get areas that are always going to be of higher value that would not qualify under normal loan limits to have permanent increases.
Does the down payment percentage change as the price accelerates?
No.
It's the same.
Correct.
Okay.
And the loan limit is $729,750. I think I said $760,000.
Yeah. Now that is for a single family.
And depending on where you are in California, you could go up to 4 units owner occupied, and the limit would be $1,403,400.
That's a lot of loan.
Yeah. Sure is.
And that's as long as it's owner occupied, it's still the 3.5% down.
Correct.
Okay. Would you say the higher loan balance has changed the mix of who borrows?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're seeing our average FICO score has gone up incredibly. When we were on our low end, our average FICO score was running over 660.
Okay.
And currently our average FICO is running over 680.
Are you doing a lot of refis?
We are doing a lot of refis. Specific numbers on that I don't have handy.
Okay, but as far as the mix, it would seem like you're probably getting somebody that is an owner-occupant wanting to refi to some of these rates that we see now.
That's correct.
When someone's buying an owner-occupied residence, are gift funds allowed?
100% gift is allowed from an immediate family member or close familial tie. From nonprofit organizations, perhaps from the individual's employer. There are a lot of opportunities out there for gift funds to be utilized.
Okay. And what about the non-owner occupant? Is there any loan available to them?
The only non-owner occupant loan that's available is if the individual is buying a HUD REO with 25% down.
Okay.
Or if the property at one point, let's say someone bought the home and it has an FHA insured mortgage on it, and they've moved on but kept that house, which is perfectly acceptable, and now they want to refinance it to get a better rate than, let's say, what on the current mortgage,
mm-hmm.
they may be able to streamline refinance it.
Okay.
Without an appraisal. Streamline refi without an appraisal.
And the same percentage as an owner-occupant at that time as far as LTV, loan-to-value?
Well, on the streamline refinance without appraisal, loan-to-value is not calculated.
Okay. What about if somebody, and this has got to be a major part of what the future is going to hold, is what if somebody has a past bankruptcy or a short sale or a foreclosure?
Okay. Bankruptcies, a borrower would need to have 2 years down on the bankruptcy since date of discharge.
Okay.
So, and on a foreclosure, short sale, deed in lieu of, they're all treated the same, it's 3 years from date of sale. But we do have exceptions for documented extenuating circumstances. And to go into those, it would be a little difficult because every borrower's situation is different. But an example would be, let's say there's a death of a child, and the individual has incurred hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills and just can't afford them, and they filed bankruptcy. That would be a documented extenuating circumstances, and they may be allowed to obtain an FHA-insured mortgage after 1 year of date of discharge on a bankruptcy, same on a foreclosure.
Okay. There's times where FHA has a policy, then the street or the lenders that handle the loan sometimes are not really aligned with that policy, and I don't know if it's
it's
a matter of timing or if it's a matter of intent. But
no, it's an excellent question. We're running up against that, hearing that everywhere we go. And FHA's guidelines are what we like to call minimum guidelines. Almost every lender have added overlays to FHA guidelines.
Okay.
For example, currently FHA does not have a FICO score requirement. You have most of the lenders out there have instituted a no minimum than 580 FICO score. There's a lot of different things that you're seeing overlays that are not an FHA requirement. And of course, we're hearing it from the public. Well, you know, they're telling me I have to do this. Well, that's the lender's right to do so.
Okay.
We don't tell them how to operate their business other than they follow our guidelines. Over and above that, they can do anything they want.
You know, when you talk about getting an FHA loan, FHA isn't really making a loan, is it?
No, FHA only insures the mortgage, but the difference between, very similar to your private mortgage insurance companies, your GEs, PMI, Magic, the difference between us and them, though, is that we insure that loan 100%. So the lender will not incur a loss as long as the loan was underwritten to our guidelines. And I know, following that up, I'll answer your next question. Well, if FHA is insuring that loan 100%, why are they adding these overlays? And that's because, from what we understand, they've looked at their own risk and they just don't want to assume that risk. So they've added the overlays to further protect themselves from, in fact, possibly making a mistake.
And that mistake, let's take the loan down the road 2 years and somebody defaults.
Mm-hmm.
When would FHA not insure the loan? They look at the file, or they relook at the file. We just interviewed David Kittle, who is the former chairman of the Mortgage Bankers Association, and he's now working for a company that does that, iMark.
Right.
So they look at the defaulted file and then find out, well, something was falsified.
And you can always go back and look at files. We can always go back and look at files. However, we audit a portion of all mortgages that are insured by the department up front. So they're not waiting 2 years to go back and look at it in the past.
Okay.
Okay? So we do audit a portion of all forward mortgages. We audit 100% of all reverse mortgages because we're very protective of the senior citizen. So if we find in our audit that something was not done correctly, then we can ask to be held harmless or for an indemnification on that particular mortgage. If we find a pattern, then there's several things that can be done if a pattern is found. One is we can remove the lender. Another is maybe we work with that lender to get them around that problem so it's not repeated. Additionally, we have stepped up our auditing of lenders. Some of the changes that we've made with the SAFE Act is the ability to pursue a lender a little quicker than we have had the ability to do so in the past.
Okay. What are some of the misconceptions? And I'll bring up one of them. They're probably, and maybe this is because there's been so much gap between the FHA program being a dominant player and now, but the condition of the home. I think there's some misconceptions that there's a lot of restrictions placed on the home.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for bringing that up, because it doesn't matter where I go. We've changed these rules had changed almost 6 years ago now, and there are still people, and again, because FHA was not a player at all in the market, we have made substantial changes to what we require in a property. We only require that the property be safe, sound, and secure, and free of health issues.
Mm-hmm.
We don't mandate termite reports anymore. We don't mandate well or septic certs. It's up to the appraiser to make that determination. And that, so what we look for in a property is no different than in any other lender. We're no different than Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or any private investor out there. The property needs to be safe, sound, secure, and free of health defects.
Doesn't seem unreasonable.
No. No. No more having to have that handrail for three steps.
Now, the appraisal process, has that changed in just the last couple of years? There's been, you know, a lot of people in the appraisal industry. How does that affect the selection of the appraiser that's doing a HUD?
Well, you know, FHA has not required the use of appraisal management companies.
I'm sure your appraisers are happy to hear that.
Well, except for the lenders are required. There's one of those overlays.
I see.
The lender is requiring it.
Okay.
But we have issued actually a mortgagee letter stating, in fact, that we do not require the use of appraisal management companies. That is a lender overlay. So unfortunately, the lender, the loan officer, the realtor, still have to go by whatever the lender is requiring of them. An FHA appraiser, however, still must be approved by FHA. They must be an FHA roster appraiser in order to do the appraisal.
And how do they accomplish that?
It's a fairly easy process. They apply online, and they take a test, and that test could be done online. And if they're successful, then they are made a roster appraiser.
Okay.
Of course, they have to have whatever state licensing is required for that state and, you know, whatever else is required for that particular area.
Buying a HUD home, now different from getting an FHA loan, now buying an actual HUD repossession, how is that done nowadays? It's been a while that since I've done it. Is it still all based online bidding,
correct,
that type of thing?
Correct. All HUD REOs are listed online, and the bidding is done online.
Okay. And I noticed, I kind of poked around the website, it's a real open forum as far as who bid what, and there's a place called, I think, Statistics, to where after the bid, you can actually go see other people's bid and what the offer netted, so you can feel pretty comfortable with the process.
Absolutely. It's all a matter of transparency.
Is there a priority of getting to bid on these properties? Are the owner-occupants given a shot?
As a matter of fact, yes, there is.
Okay.
And owner occupants are given an exclusive period of 10 days.
10 days, okay.
And that is nationwide.
Okay.
Okay, to bid on the property. After the 10 days is when investors can then participate.
Okay.
But I will tell you that process is now being looked at, and perhaps shortening the time for investors based on the condition of the property. But not right now.
Okay.
It's exclusive owner-occupied for the first 10 days.
Does that mean they might look at the 203K loan program at the same look?
Actually, here's something I need to share with you.
Oh, my goodness.
With the rehabilitation loan, the 203K program, which is the rehabilitation loan, mm-hmm. that program never went away for an investor on a HUD REO.
Ah, I didn't know that.
An investor is not eligible to buy an investment property and utilize FHA's 203K rehabilitation loan under normal guidelines. But under the HUD REO program, that program is available to investors.
Wouldn't that change the down payment requirement?
No, still 25% down for an investor.
Shucks. Okay. I keep trying.
I know.
Well, you know, we did make some progress in the last, when we talked 2 years ago, we were still waiting 90 days to sell something.
Oh, exactly. And then there was the waiver to the property flipping that was published in January of this year that now does allow an investor to resell a property within that 90 days without restriction. Well, with fewer restrictions.
Yes. But we do know investors that have accomplished it.
That's great.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that where the HUD policy had changed, but the lender policy had not.
Okay.
That took a little while to emerge, but I do know investors now that have gotten it accomplished, and there's some documentation, and I suppose that's one of the sensitive areas, called flipping.
Right.
Where you certainly can have fraud, but it's one of those things where you have a very few rotten apples really ruin what's possible for a lot of investors.
Absolutely.
So I think most of our intent is we'd like to touch some of the FHA inventory that needs a lot of work and do our thing and turn it over to an owner-occupant and make a living in the meantime.
Right.
So hopefully HUD will get a little bit more open to that. We only got another 40 seconds. Bulk buying, I noticed there was a chance to do bulk buying, but specifically I want to ask, and again, 30 seconds left, nonprofits. They used to have some advantages that they could buy. Is that still true?
Yes, that's correct. Nonprofits have a special list of HUD REOs where they can go in and bid on the properties listed for the nonprofits.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that maybe right at the beginning of our next segment. Nancy West has joined us. She's a marketing and outreach specialist for HUD. Nancy, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again.
Thank you again, Bruce.
You bet.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.